The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, in the budget last week, there were all sorts of hopes for changes and improvements for those who seek to buy a house. Did anything happen that changes the picture? Well, David Quinn, MD of InvestWise Financial Planning, is with me today to take your questions. David, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Was there anything in the budget?
Nothing new. Extensions of some of the reliefs and programs that are there to support first-time buyers, which is kind of welcome development, and some talk around the numbers of houses that are planned to be built in the next few years, but nothing new.
And the only thing we're going to see with more houses, hopefully, we get a stability in the market and not the kind of price rises we see inevitably month in, month out.
Yeah, but let's face it, the government are fighting to try and keep up with demand. The population is increasing at an incredibly fast rate, and there's an awful lot of cash in the system ready to spend on housing. So I think whatever number they come up with isn't going to keep up with demand for now. So they're chasing their tail a little bit and trying to create a number that will actually satisfy demand and stabilise the market a bit.
Yeah, and the question of those vulture funds who were coming in. Now, people were saying if they don't come in anymore, there won't be apartment blocks built. I mean, the developers were building them and then flogged them off to the vulture funds, sometimes intending maybe to sell them or to put them out to rent. And then they get an offer they can't refuse from the vulture funds.
Yes, of course. And it's one sale rather than having to sell 300 apartments. You just do one, you get one check. Thank you very much. It's the obvious solution. Now, you know, there is anecdotal evidence, particularly in South Dublin, that the rental market is softening a little bit, and there's so much supply in that rental market that maybe it's less attractive.
Maybe empty blocks now.
They may start selling some. I live in Howth, and there's close to 1,000 apartments being built out there at the moment. Mm. I can't see how they're going to rent all of them.
Yeah. What about the penal taxes now on those who buy multiple apartments or houses?
Yeah, and that rate went up in the budget slightly for those. And I suppose that's a disincentive. And maybe that's a deliberate ploy in the government to try and get some of these apartments sold.
This stamp duty increases. But, you know, if you take a long view, like you're a pension fund and you're looking at 70 years, not 7 years or whatever, they probably don't mind.
No, they don't.
Pay the extra tax and get on with it.
And they're very happy to get a stable yield. If they can get 5% stable yield for the next 20 years, they're delighted. Because if they don't do that and they sell the apartment, they get the cash back and they have to figure out something to do with it. Yeah. So they love that.
When I look in my area, as you do in yours, the number of blocks that are being built exclusively for rent, you are wondering, who are they talking about? Because we might be at the end of a dart line from the Financial Services Centre, but not all of them are.
Who
are the people who are going to be renting these at pretty astronomical rates?
And a lot of these apartment complexes were planned 3 or 4 years ago when there was a booming tech sector and lots of new jobs in that younger, high-paid cohort. And that softened a little. So plans change and you know, the economy moves very fast. So we will see what that demand looks like now going forward. There is big demand for, you know, family homes and first-time buyer homes. So that's why it may shift.
Yeah, and even the blocks they're building are not fit for families. You know, there's no storage in most of them. There's no playgrounds. You know, it's just not appropriate family-friendly building that we've been doing.
So. No, and the schools in those areas that we're talking about are at bursting point already. So that's a big factor as well. Mm.
All right, some of the questions coming in. Mm. I took out a mortgage with a broker in 2003. At that time, he signed me up for mortgage protection insurance. Nothing was explained to me. I was just told everyone took that option. Fair enough, and I continued to pay. I've since learned that I can claim back this type of insurance. I contacted the bank, the PTSB, and they say they're not liable as I took the insurance through a long-gone broker.
Yeah, this is an interesting point. People are generally so relieved to get mortgage approval and get it across the line, they kind of forget about the mortgage protection insurance, and it's an afterthought, typically signed on the final day.
Isn't it something that's very useful, though? I mean, it depends how well it protects you. I mean, does it protect you from losing your job?
Yeah.
Does it protect you if one partner is bereaved by the other, you know?
Yeah, so the mandatory mortgage protection, which everyone has to take out, it just pays out on death. So it pays off the mortgage on death and it reduces in line with the mortgage. So typically there might be a small balance left. Now, the listener here is talking about claiming back. Mortgage protection is a life insurance policy, effectively, that the bank has a say on, but it's not usually tax deductible unless the broker sold them some sort of income protection policy, which would kind of insure their salary. That would be tax deductible. So,
yeah, but it's hard to see how, once the premium is paid, hard to get anything back.
No, certainly not in life insurance, because the benefit that's paid out is tax-free, so they're not going to give you tax relief on the
way. Obviously, you hope you never have to claim on it.
Of course.
Because you want to stay alive.
Yeah, yeah. And it is cheap insurance and it is very useful because the mortgage is typically someone's biggest outlay.
In 2008, I bought a family home with my husband. Subsequently, we divorced. And as part of the court agreement, my ex-husband signed a deed of waiver and he took one of our investment properties. I remarried in 2022 and both myself and my husband had been paying the mortgage in full. What are my options to get my husband on the mortgage, or do I have to remortgage? And if I stay on the current mortgage and we pay it down very quickly, does my ex-husband have any comeback?
Yeah, really interesting question here. Firstly, adding someone to the mortgage like this, you know, a new husband is typically reasonably easy, that equity transfer. Yeah. The banks love having someone else involved for security reasons, and, you know, it makes the underwriting a bit easier. So that equity transfer, assuming they're going to be added to the deeds as well, is generally relatively straightforward. The second part of that question about the ex-husband is a legal question, depending on the separation.
But, I mean,
and divorce
if he signed
agreements.
A waiver and he gets one property and she gets the family home, as it were,
should be fine. It just depends on the wording of the agreements at the time and you know what the waiver kind of confirmed.
And also possibly how each is doing in the aftermath of the divorce. You know, sometimes people get aggrieved and they go after things that maybe they have no legal right to.
Yeah, and we see
that. But they can make life very awkward.
Definitely, it can be difficult. But adding the husband to the mortgage is straightforward enough.
I have 9 years left on my mortgage. I'm currently in the process of retirement. My lump sum would clear the balance. I am in a quandary. Should I clear it or clear off half? If that is possible, should I continue to pay it monthly? What do I do?
Yeah, a whole load of parts to this question, really. I guess, depending on the mortgage rate, clearing it down as much as you possibly can with your lump sum is a good idea because it gives you some control over your retirement income. But you don't want to use all of your lump sum and have no cash left. So I would like to see this individual with some sort of a rainy day cash fund left from their lump sum. And if that's the case, maybe it makes sense to pay it off. Getting the mortgage rate in pension returns is difficult and takes risks.
So. And we don't know how generous the pension is that would continue to pay a portion of those monthly repayments.
I don't like to see people still paying a mortgage in retirement if they can avoid it at all.
If I have an extra few hundred left over at the end of the month, can I pay ad hoc into the mortgage account or will I be penalised?
Again, if it's a variable rate or a tracker rate, this tends to not be a problem. And then you just decide whether you're going to reduce the term or just reduce the repayment. Sometimes I like to look at the alternatives. You know, if you have a few hundred quid to spare long term in your financial plan, are you better off putting it in as an AVC into your pension fund where it might grow, or paying off the mortgage? That's that depends on individual circumstances.
But if you're fixed,
you just can't do it, yeah.
Some European countries prohibit investment companies from buying residential accommodation. Should we do the same and why don't we?
Yeah, like the debate rages on about this, and would we have been able to build all these apartments without foreign capital coming in, and is there money in Ireland to do it? It's a hot topic now as to, you know, what money would we use if we don't allow these people to come in and, you know, provide their capital? Where does it come from?
Yeah. And I think there's a structural thing in the building industry at the moment. They find apartments are expensive to build. They want to maximise the yield from a particular site. And there's a shortage of the kind of house that people actually want, which is the 3-bed semi with a little back garden where they can have a dog.
Yeah, and if they're all being rented to a pension fund, you have to question whether the quality of the interior fit out and that type of thing is what you'd want yourself if you were buying.
Mm-hmm. Question, why doesn't mortgage protection premium reduce with the balance of the mortgage?
Yeah, so mortgage protection premiums are typically really low because the balance is reducing over time. You can't get life insurance where the premium reduces over time. The insurance companies are too clever for that by far. But the premiums on mortgage protection tend to be really cheap in the first place. So it allows for that, takes account of that.
So they're looking at the long term. Yeah. They're looking at the life of the mortgage and working out the premium on that basis.
Yeah, but it's really worth shopping around. I see a lot of people, as I said earlier, just signing on the dotted line on the final day of their mortgage approval, whereas there's big differences between the most expensive and the cheapest mortgage protection. And you can do it yourself. You don't have to do it through the bank.
Okay, very good. David Quinn, MD of InvestWise Financial Planning. David, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.